can in hand, watching reality television. A nice break from their own reality, which wasn't all that terrific. Clown gave me a look that said, "Now what?" "Now we wait," I told him. "We make sure nothing unusual is going on." Clown nodded and made the zippered mouth sign again. If he made the zippered mouth sign one more time, I was going to smack him in the head. After a half hour of sitting and waiting, I was convinced that I didn't want to sit and wait anymore. "Let's take a closer look," I said to Clown. "Follow me."
"Shouldn't I have a gun or something? What if there's a shootout? Do you have a gun? Where's your gun?"
"I left my gun home. We don't need guns. Andy Bender has never been known to carry a gun. Best not to mention he prefers chainsaws and kitchen knives." I approached Bender's unit as if I owned it. Bounty hunter rule number 17, don't look sneaky. Lights were on inside. The windows were curtained, but the curtains were a skimpy fit, and it was possible to look around the fabric. I put my nose to the window and stared in at the Benders. Andy was in a big overstuffed recliner, feet up, open bag of chips on his chest, dead to the world. His wife sat on the tattered couch, eyes glued to the television.
"I'm pretty sure we're doing something illegal," Clown whispered.
"There's all kinds of illegal. This is one of those things that's only a little illegal."
"I guess it's okay if you're a bounty hunter. There are special rules for bounty hunters, right?"
"Right. And there really is an Easter Bunny." I wanted to get into the apartment, but I didn't want to wake Bender. I walked around the building and carefully tried Bender's back door. Locked. I returned to the front and found that door locked, too. I gave a couple light raps on the door with my knuckles, hoping to get the wife's attention without waking Bender. Clown was looking in the window. He shook his head. No one was getting up to answer the door. I rapped louder. Nothing. Bender's wife was concentrating on the television show. Damn. I rang the bell. Clown jumped away from the window and rushed to my side.
"She's coming!"
The door opened, and Bender's wife stood flat-footed in front of us. She was a large woman with pale skin and a dagger tattooed on her arm. Her eyes were red-rimmed and dull, her face expressionless. She wasn't as wasted as her husband, but she was well on the way. She took a step back when I introduced myself.
"Andy don't like to be disturbed," she said. "He gets in a real bad mood when he's disturbed."
"Maybe you should go to a friend's house so you're not here if Andy gets disturbed." Last thing I wanted was for Andy to beat on his wife because she let us disturb him. She looked at her husband still asleep in his chair. Then she looked at us. And then she took off out the door, disappearing into the darkness. Clown and I tiptoed up to Bender and took a closer look.
"Maybe he's dead,"
Clown said. "I don't think so."
"He smells dead."
"He always smells like that." I was prepared this time. I had my stun gun with me. I leaned forward, pressed my stun gun to Bender, and hit the juice button. Nothing happened. I examined the stun gun. It looked okay. I put it to Bender again. Nothing. Goddamn electronic piece of shit. Okay, go to backup plan. I grabbed the cuffs I had tucked into my back pocket and quietly clicked a bracelet on Bender's right wrist. Bender's eyes flew open.
"What the hell?"
I pulled his cuffed hand across his body and secured the second bracelet onto his left wrist.
"Goddamn!" he yelled. "I hate being disturbed when I'm watching television. What the fuck are you doing in my house?"
"The same thing I was doing in your house yesterday. Bond enforcement," I said. "You're in violation of your bond. You need to reschedule." He glared at Clown.
"What's with the doughboy?"
Clown handed Bender his business card.
"Albert Clown, attorney at law."
"I hate clowns. They creep me out."
Clown pointed to his name on the card.
"Clown, he said. "If you ever need a lawyer, I'm real good."
"Oh, yeah?"
Bender said.
Well, I hate lawyers even more than clowns.
He jumped forward and knocked Clown on his ass with a headbutt to Clown's face.
And I hate you,
he said, lunging at me head down. I sidestepped and tried the stun gun on him again. No effect. I ran after him and made another stab. He never broke stride. He was across the room through the open front door. I threw the stun gun at him. It bounced off his head. He yelled, ouch! And he was gone into the darkness. I was torn between following after him and helping Clown. Clown was on his back, blood trickling from his nose, mouth open, eyes glazed. Hard to tell if he was just stunned or in a genuine coma. Are you okay? I yelled at Clown. Clown didn't say anything. His arms were in motion, but he wasn't making any progress at getting up. I went to his side and dropped to one knee. Are you okay? I asked again. His eyes focused, and he reached for me, grabbing a handful of shirt.
Did I hit him?
Yeah, you hit him with your face.
I knew it. I knew I'd be good under pressure. I'm pretty tough, right?
Right. God help me, I was starting to like him. I dragged him up and got him some paper towels from the kitchen. Bender was long gone, along with my cuffs. Again. I retrieved the useless stun gun, packed Clown into the CRV, and took off. It was a cloudy, moonless night. The projects were dark. Lights burned behind drawn shades, but did nothing to illuminate lawns. I drove along the streets surrounding the projects, searching the shadows for movement, staring into the occasional uncurtained window. Clown had his head tipped back, with the towel stuffed up his nose.
Does this happen a lot?
He asked.
I thought it would be different. I mean, this was pretty fun, but he got away. Ed, he didn't smell good. I didn't expect him to smell that bad.
I looked over at Clown. He seemed different, crooked somehow. Has your nose always curved to the left? I asked him. He gingerly touched his nose.
It feels funny. You don't think it's broken, do you? I've never had anything broken before.
It was just about the most broken nose I'd ever seen. It doesn't look broken to me, I said. Still, it wouldn't hurt to have a doctor look at it. Maybe we should make a quick stop off at the emergency room. Chapter 5. I opened my eyes and looked at the clock. 8:30. Not exactly an early start to the day. I could hear rain spattering on my fire escape and on my window pane. My feeling on rain is that it should only occur at night when people are sleeping. At night, rain is cozy. During the day, rain is a pain in the gumpy. Another screw-up on the part of creation. Like waste management. When you're planning a universe, you have to think ahead. I rolled out of bed and sleepwalked to the kitchen. Rex was done running for the night, sound asleep in his soup can. I got coffee going and shuffled to the bathroom. An hour later, I was in my car, ready to start the day, not sure what to do first. Probably I should pay a condolence visit on Clown. I'd gotten his nose broken. By the time I dropped him at his car, his eyes were black, and his nose was being held straight by a Band-Aid. Problem is, if I go see him now, I run the risk of having him latch on to me for the day, and I really didn't want Clown tagging along. I was fairly inept when left to my own devices. With Clown tagging along, I was a disaster waiting to happen. I was sitting in my lot, staring out the rain-smeared window, and I realized there was a plastic sandwich bag attached to my windshield wiper. I opened the door and snatched the bag off the wiper. There was a note-sized piece of white paper folded four times inside the bag. The message on the paper was written in black marker. Did you like the snakes? Wonderful. Just the way I wanted to start my day. I returned the note to the bag and put the bag in the glove compartment. On the seat beside me were the two FTA folders Connie had given me. Andrew Bender, still at large, and Laura Manello. I'd go out and capture one of them this morning, but I didn't have any handcuffs, and I'd rather poke myself in the eye with a fork than get another pair of cuffs from the office. That left Annie Soder. I put the CRV in gear and drove to the Berg. I parked in front of my parents' house, but I knocked on Mabel's door. "Who did Evelyn hang out with when she was a kid?" I asked Mabel. "Did she have a best friend?"
"Dottie Pulowski. They went all through grade school together, high school too. Then Evelyn got married and Dottie moved away."
"Did they stay friends?"
"I think they lost touch. Evelyn kept more and more to herself after she married."
"Do you know where Dottie is now?"
"I don't know where Dottie's living, but her folks are still here in the Berg."
I knew the family. Dottie's parents lived on Roebling. There were some aunts and uncles and cousins in the Berg, too. "I need one more thing," I said to Mabel. "I need a list of Evelyn's relatives. All of them." I had the list in my hand when I left. It wasn't a long list. An aunt and an uncle in the Berg. 3 cousins all in the Trenton area. A cousin in Delaware. I jumped the railing that divided the porches and went next door to see Grandma Mazur.
"I went to the Schleckner viewing," Grandma said. "I'm telling you, that Steva is a genius. When it comes to morticians, you can't beat Steva. You know how old Schleckner had all those big scabby things on his face? Well, Steva covered them all somehow, and you couldn't even tell Schleckner had a glass eye. They both looked just the same. It was a miracle."
"How do you know about the glass eye? Didn't they have his eyes closed?"
"Yeah, but they might have come open for a second while I was standing there. It might have happened when I accidentally dropped my reading glasses into the casket."
"Hmm," I said to Grandma.
"Well, you can't blame a person for wondering about those things. Wasn't my fault, either. If they'd left his eyes open, I wouldn't have had to wonder."
"Did anyone see you prying Schleckner's eyes open?"
"No, I was real sneaky."
"Did you hear anything useful about Evelyn or Annie?"
"No, but I got an earful about Steven Soder. He likes to drink, and he likes to gamble. The rumor is that he's lost a lot of money, and that he lost the bar. The story goes that he lost the bar in a card game a while back, and now he's got partners."
"I've heard some of those same rumors. Anyone give names to the partners?"
"Eddie Abruzzi is what I heard."
Oh boy, why am I not surprised at this? I was in my car, ready to roll, when my cell phone rang. It was Clown.
"Boy, you should see me," he said. "I've got 2 black eyes, and my nose is swollen. At least it's straight now. I was real careful how I slept on it."
"I'm sorry, really, really sorry."
"Hey, no biggie. I guess you have to expect stuff like this when you're a crime fighter. So, what are we doing today? Are we going after Bender again? I have some ideas. Maybe I could meet you for lunch."
"See, here's the thing. I usually work alone."
"Sure, but once in a while you work with a partner, right? And I could be the partner sometimes, right? I got myself all prepared. I got a black hat with Bond Enforcement printed on it this morning. And I got pepper spray and handcuffs."
"Handcuffs? Be still, my fast-beating heart. Are these regulation handcuffs with a key and everything?"
"Yeah, I got them at that gun store on Ryder Street. I would have gotten a gun, too, but I didn't have enough money."
"I'll pick you up at 12.
"Oh, boy, this is going to be great. I'll be all ready. I'll be at my office. Maybe we could get fried chicken this time. Unless you don't want fried chicken. If you don't want fried chicken, we could get a burrito, or we could get a burger, or we could..."
I made crackling sounds into the phone. "Can't hear you," I yelled. "You're breaking up. See you at 12. And I disconnected. I cruised out of the Berg and turned onto Hamilton. In a few minutes, I was at the office. I parked at the curb behind a new black Porsche, which I suspected belonged to Ranger. Everyone looked over when I swung through the door. Ranger was at Connie's desk. He was dressed in SWAT black again. He caught my eye, and I felt my stomach do a nervous roll.
"I had a friend work in the emergency room last night, and she told me you came in with a little guy who was all busted up,"
Lula said. "Clown, and he wasn't all busted up. He just had a broken nose. Don't ask."
Vinny was lounging in the doorway to his inner office.
"Who's this clown?" Vinny asked.
"Albert Clown," Ranger said. "He's an attorney."
I stopped short of asking how Ranger knew Clown. The answer was obvious. Ranger knew everything.
"Let me guess," Vinny said to me. "You need another pair of cuffs."
"Wrong. I need an address. I need to talk to Dottie Pulowski." Connie fed the name to the search system. A minute later, the information started coming in.
"She's Dottie Reinholdt now, and she's living in South River."
Connie printed the page and handed it over to me.
"She's divorced with two kids, and she works for the Turnpike Authority in East Brunswick."
Ordinarily, I'd stay to chat, but I was afraid someone would ask about Clown's nose. "Gotta run," I said. "Things to do." I paused just outside the office door. I was sheltered by a small overhead awning. Beyond the awning, the rain fell in a relentless drizzle that didn't measure up to downpour status, but was enough to ruin my hair and soak into my jeans. Ranger followed me out.
"It might be good to keep more than one bullet in your gun, babe."
"You heard about the snakes?"
"I ran into Costanza. He was looking at life through the bottom of a beer glass."
"I'm not having much luck finding Annie Soder."
"You're not the only one."
"Jean Ellen can't find her either."
"Not yet."
Our eyes held for a moment. "Which team are you on?" I asked. He tucked my hair behind my ear, his fingertips brushing feather light across my temple, his thumb at the line of my jaw.
"I have my own team."
"Tell me about Jean Ellen." Ranger smiled.
"The information would have a price."
"And the price would be what?" The smile widened.
"Try not to get too wet today," he said,
and he was gone.
Damn, what's with the men in my life? Why do they always leave first? Why don't I ever walk away and leave first?
Because I'm a dope, that's why. I'm a big dope. I picked Clown up at the laundromat. He was dressed in a black t-shirt and black jeans, wearing his new bond enforcement hat, and he had brown tassel loafers on his feet. The pepper spray was clipped to his belt. The cuffs had been shoved into his back pocket. His eyes and nose were an alarming shade of black, blue, and green.
"Wow," I said. "You look awful."
"It's the tassels, right? I wasn't sure if the tassels went with the outfit. I could go home and change. I could have worn black shoes, but I thought they were too dressy."
"It's not the tassels. It's your eyes and nose."
"Okay, and it's the tassels." Clown got in and buckled his seatbelt.
"I guess that's all part of the job. Gotta get physical sometimes, right? Goes with the territory, you know what I mean?"
"Your territory is law."
"Yeah, but I'm an assistant bond enforcer too, right? I'm walking the mean streets with you, right?"
"You see, Stephanie," I told myself, "this is what happens when you run your credit card up buying non-essentials like shoes and underwear and then can't afford to buy handcuffs."
"I was going to get a stun gun," Clown said, "but yours didn't work last night." "What's with that? You pay good money for these things, and then they don't work. That's always the way, isn't it? You know what you need? You need a lawyer. You were misled by product promises."
I stopped for a light and pulled the stun gun out of my bag and checked it over. "I don't understand this," I said to Clown. "It's always worked just fine." He took the stun gun from me and turned it around in his hand.
"Maybe it needs batteries."
"No, they're new. They test out okay."
"Maybe you were doing it wrong?"
"Hardly. It's not that complicated. You press the prongs against someone's skin and push the button."
"Like this?"
Clown said, pressing the prongs against his arm, pushing the button. He gave a tiny squeak and slumped in his seat. I took the stun gun from his inert hand and studied it. It seemed to work okay now. I dropped the stun gun back into my bag, drove back to the burg, and stopped at Corner Hardware. Corner Hardware was a ramshackle affair that had been in existence for as long as I could remember. The store itself occupied two adjoining buildings with a door carved into the common wall. The floor was unvarnished wood and cracked linoleum.
The shelves were dusty, and the air smelled of fertilizer and socket wrenches. Everything you might need could be found in the store at a price higher than could be found elsewhere. The advantage to Corner Hardware was the location. It was in the burg. No need to drive down Route 1 or go to Hamilton Township. The additional advantage for me today was the fact that no one at Corner Hardware would think it odd that I was schlepping around with a guy with two black eyes. Everyone in the burg would have heard about Clown. By the time I got to the hardware store, Clown was starting to come around. His fingers were twitching, and he had one eye open. I left Clown in the car while I ran into the store and bought 20 feet of medium-weight chain and a padlock. I had a plan for capturing Bender. I dumped the 20 feet of chain onto the street behind the CRV. I got the cuffs from Clown's back pocket, and I attached one end of the chain to one of the bracelets. Then I padlocked the other end of the chain to the tow hitch on my car. I tossed the remaining chain and cuffs into the back window and got behind the wheel. I was soaked, but it was worth it. No way was Bender going to run off with my cuffs this time. The instant I cuffed Bender, he'd be attached to my car. I drove across town, idled one block over from Bender's apartment, and dialed his number. When he answered, I hung up. "He's home," I told Clown.
"Let's roll."
Clown was examining his hand, wiggling his fingers.
"I feel kinda tingly."
"That's because you zapped yourself with my stun gun."
"I thought it didn't work."
"I guess you fixed it."
"I'm real handy," Clown said. "I'm good at all kinds of things like that."
I jumped the curb in front of Bender's apartment, drove across the mud yard, and parked with my rear bumper pressed to Bender's front stoop. I leaped out of the car, ran to Bender's door, and barged into his living room. Bender was in his chair watching television. He saw me enter and went bug-eyed and slack-jawed.
"You," he said. "What the fuck?"
A second later, he was out of his chair, bolting for the back door.
"Grab him!"
I yelled to Clown.
"Gas him! Trip him! Do something!"
Clown took a flying leap and caught Bender by the pants leg. Both men went down to the floor. I threw myself on Bender and cuffed him. I rolled off, elated. Bender scrambled to his feet and ran for the door, dragging the chain behind him. Clown and I did a high five.
"Boy, you're smart," Clown said. "I would never have thought of hooking him up to the bumper. I gotta hand it to you. You're good. You're really good."
"Make sure the back door is locked," I said to Clown. "I don't want the apartment burgled." I clicked the television off, and Clown and I walked to the door just in time to see Bender drive off in my CRV.
Shit.
"Hey!"
Clown yelled to Bender.
"You've got my handcuffs!"
Bender had his arm out the window, holding the door on the driver's side closed. The chain snaked from the door to the back bumper, a loop of chain dragging on the ground, sending up sparks. Bender raised his arm and gave us the finger just before turning the corner and disappearing from view.
"I bet you left the key at the ignition,"
Clown said.
"I think that might be illegal. I bet you didn't lock your door either. You should always take the key and lock the door."
I gave Clown my bitch look.
"Of course, these were special circumstances," he added.
Clown huddled under the small overhang that protected the front stoop to Bender's apartment. I was at curbside, in the rain, sopping wet, waiting for the blue and white. You reach a point with rain where it just doesn't matter anymore. I'd hoped to get Costanza or my pal Eddie Gazzara when I'd put the call in for a stolen vehicle. The car that responded wasn't either.
"So, you're the famous Stephanie Plum," the cop said.
"I almost never shoot people," I said, sliding onto the back seat of the cruiser. "And the fire in the funeral parlor wasn't my fault." I leaned forward, and water dripped from the tip of my nose onto the floor of the car. "Usually Costanza answers my calls," I said.
"He didn't win the pool."
"There's a pool?"
"Yeah, participation really dropped after that thing with the snakes."
15 minutes later, the blue and white left, and Morelli showed up. "Listening to your radio again?" I asked.
"I don't have to listen to my radio anymore.
As soon as your name pops up somewhere in the system, I get 45 phone calls.
I did a small grimace, which I hoped was endearing. Sorry.
Let me get this straight,
Morelli said.
Bender drove away, chained to the car.
It seemed like a good idea at the time.
And your handbag was in the car?
Yep. Morelli looked over at Clown.
Who's the little guy in the tassel loafers and black eyes?
Albert Clown.
And you brought him along because?
He had the handcuffs. Morelli struggled not to smile and lost.
Get in the truck. I'll take you home.
We dropped Clown off first.
Hey, you know what? Clown said. We never had lunch. Do you think we should all go to lunch? There's Mexican just down the street. Or we could catch a burger or an egg roll. I know a place that makes good egg rolls.
I'll call you, I said. He waved us out of sight.
That'll be great. Call me. Do you have my number? You could call any time. I hardly ever sleep, even.
Morelli stopped for a light, looked at me, and shook his head. Okay, so I'm wet, I said.
Albert thinks you're cute.
He just wants to be part of the gang. I brushed a clump of hair from my face. How about you? Do you think I'm cute?
I think you're crazy.
Yes, but besides that, you think I'm cute, right? I gave him my Miss America smile and fluttered my lashes. He glanced over at me stone-faced. I was feeling a little like Scarlett O'Hara at the end of Gone with the Wind, when she's determined to get Rhett Butler back. Problem was, if I got Morelli back, I wasn't sure what I'd do with him. Life is complicated, I said to Morelli.
No shit, Cupcake.
I waved goodbye to Morelli and dripped through the lobby to my building. I dripped in the elevator, and I dripped down the hall to my next-door neighbor, Mrs. Carwatt. I got my spare key from Mrs. Carwatt, and then I dripped into my apartment. I stood in the middle of my kitchen and peeled my clothes off. I toweled my hair until it stopped dripping. I checked my messages. None. Rex popped out of his soup can, gave me a startled look, and rushed back into the can. Not the sort of reaction that makes a naked woman feel great, even from a hamster. An hour later, I was dressed in dry clothes, and I was downstairs waiting for Lula.
Okay, let me get this straight,
Lula said when I settled into her Trans Am.
You need to do surveillance, and you don't got a car.
I held my hand up to ward off the next question. Don't ask.
I'm hearing don't ask a lot lately.
It was stolen. My car was stolen.
Get out.
I'm sure the police will find it. In the meantime, I want to take a look at Dottie Pulowski-Reinholdt. She's living in South River.
In South River is where?
I've got a map. Turn left out of the lot. South River jug handles off Route 18. It's a small town squashed between strip malls and clay pits, and has more bars per square mile than any other town in the state. The entrance provides a scenic overlook of the landfill. The exit crosses the river into Sayreville, famous for the great dirt swindle of 1957, and John Bon Jovi. Dottie Reinholdt lived in a neighborhood of tract houses built in the 60s. Yards were small. Houses were smaller. Cars were large and plentiful.
You ever see so many cars? Lula said. If a house has at least three cars, they're everywhere.
It was an easy neighborhood for surveillance. It had reached an age where houses were filled with teenagers. The teenagers had cars of their own, and the teenagers had friends who had cars. One more car on the street would never be noticed. Even better, this was suburbia. There were no front porch stoop sitters. Everyone migrated to the postage stamp size backyards, which were crammed full of outdoor grills, above-ground pools, and herds of lawn chairs. Lula parked the Trans Am one house down and across the street from Dottie.
Do you think Annie and her mama are living with Dottie?
If they are, we'll know right away. You can't hide two people in your cellar with kids underfoot. It's too weird. And kids talk. If Annie and Evelyn are here, they're coming and going like normal house guests.
And we're going to sit here until we figure this out? This sounds like it could take a long time. I don't know if I'm prepared to sit here for a long time. I mean, what about food? And I have to go to the bathroom. I had a supersized soda before I picked you up. You didn't say anything about a long time.
I gave Lula the squinty eye.
Well, I gotta go, Lula said. I can't help it. I gotta wee.
Okay, how about this? We passed a mall on the way in. How about if I drop you at the mall, and then I take the car and do the surveillance? Half an hour later, I was back at the curb, alone, snooping on Dottie. The drizzle had turned to rain, and lights were on in some of the houses. Dottie's house was dark. A blue Honda Civic rolled past me and pulled into Dottie's driveway. A woman got out and unbuckled two kids from kiddie seats in the back. The woman was shrouded in a hooded raincoat, but I caught a look at her face in the gloom, and I was certain it was Dottie. Or, to be more precise, I was certain it wasn't Evelyn. The kids were young, maybe 2 and 7. Not that I'm an expert on kids. My entire kid knowledge is based on my 2 nieces. The little family entered the house, and lights went on. I put the Trans Am into gear and inched my way up until I was directly across from the Reinholds. I could clearly see Dottie now. She had the raincoat off, and she was moving around. The living room was in the front of the house. A television was switched on in the living room. A door opened off the living room, and the room beyond was obviously the kitchen. Dottie was traveling back and forth across the doorway from refrigerator to table. No other adult appeared. Dottie made no move to draw the living room curtains. The kids were in bed, and their bedroom lights were out by 9 o'clock. At 9:15, Dottie got a phone call. At 9:30, Dottie was still on the phone, and I left to pick Lula up at the mall. A block and a half from Dottie's house, a sleek black car slid by me, traveling in the opposite direction. I caught a glimpse of the driver. Jean Ellen Burroughs. I almost took the curb and ran across a lawn. Lula was waiting at the mall entrance when I got there.
Get in, I yelled. I have to get back to Dottie's house. I passed Jean Ellen Burroughs when I was leaving the neighborhood. What about Evelyn and Annie?
No sign of them. The house was dark when we returned. The car was in the driveway. Jean Ellen was nowhere to be found.
You sure it was Jean Ellen? Lula asked.
Positive. All the hair stood up on my arm, and I got an ice cream headache.
Yep, that would be Jean Ellen.
Lula dropped me at the door to my apartment building.
Anytime you want to do surveillance, you just let me know, Lula said. Surveillance is one of my favorite things.
Rex was in his wheel when I came into the kitchen. He stopped running and looked at me, eyes bright.
Good news, big guy, I said. I stopped at the store on the way home and got supper.
I dumped the contents of the bag on the counter. 7 tasty cakes, 2 butterscotch crimpets, a coconut junior, 2 peanut butter candy cakes, cream-filled cupcakes, and a chocolate junior. Life doesn't get much better than this. Tasty cakes are just another of the many advantages of living in Jersey. They're made in Philly and shipped to Trenton in all their fresh squishiness. I read once that 439,000 butterscotch crimpets are baked every day, and not a heck of a lot of them find their way to New Hampshire. All that snow and scenery, and what good does it do you without tasty cakes?
I ate the coconut junior, a butterscotch crimpet, and a candy cake.
Rex had part of the butterscotch crimpet. Things haven't been going too great for me lately. In the past week, I've lost 3 pairs of handcuffs, a car, and I've had a bag of snakes delivered to my door. On the other hand, things aren't all bad. In fact, things could be a lot worse. I could be living in New Hampshire, where I would be forced to mail order tasty cakes. It was close to 12 when I crawled into bed. The rain had stopped, and the moon was shining between the broken cloud cover. My curtains were drawn, and my room was dark. An old-fashioned fire escape attached to my bedroom window. The fire escape was good for catching a cool breeze on a hot night. It could be used to dry clothes, quarantine houseplants with aphids, and chill beer when the weather turned cold. Unfortunately, it was also a place where bad things happened. Benito Ramirez had been shot to death on my fire escape.
As it happens, it isn't easy to climb up my fire escape, but it isn't impossible either. I was laying in the dark, debating the merits of the coconut junior over the butterscotch crimpet, when I heard scraping sounds beyond the closed bedroom curtains. Someone was on my fire escape. I felt a shot of adrenaline burn into my heart and flash into my gut. I jumped out of bed, ran into the kitchen, and called the police. Then I took the gun out of the cookie jar. No bullets. Damn. Think, Stephanie. Where did you put the bullets? There used to be some in the sugar bowl. Not anymore. The sugar bowl was empty. I rummaged through the junk drawer and came up with 4 bullets. I shoved them into my Smith & Wesson 5-shot 38 and ran back into my bedroom. I stood in the dark and listened. No more scraping sounds. My heart was pounding and the gun was shaking in my hand. Get a grip, I told myself. It was probably a bird, an owl. They fly at night, right? Silly Stephanie, freaked out by an owl. I crept to the window and listened again. Silence. I opened the curtain a fraction of an inch and peeked out. Yikes! There was a huge guy on my fire escape. I only saw him for an instant, but he looked like Benito Ramirez. How could that be? Ramirez was dead. There was a lot of noise, and I realized I'd fired all 4 rounds through my window into the guy on my fire escape. Rats. This isn't a good thing. First off, I might have killed someone. I hate when that happens. Second, I haven't a clue if the guy had a gun, and the law frowns on shooting unarmed people. The law isn't even all that fond of citizens shooting armed people. Even worse, my window was trashed. I ripped the curtain aside and pressed my nose to the window pane. No one out there. I looked more closely and saw that I'd blasted a life-size cardboard cutout. It was laying flat on the fire escape, and there were a bunch of holes in it. I was standing there dumbfounded, breathing heavy with the gun still in my hand, when I heard the police siren whining in the distance. Good going, Stephanie. The one time I call the police and it turns out to be an embarrassing false alarm. An evil prank, like the snakes. So who would do something like this? Someone who knew about Ramirez getting killed on my fire escape. I gave up a sigh. The entire state knew about Ramirez. It was in all the papers. Okay, someone who had access to a life-size cutout. There had been a lot of the cutouts floating around when Ramirez was fighting. Not many of them floating around now. One person came to mind. Eddie Abruzzi. A blue and white pulled into my parking lot, lights flashing, and a uniform got out. I opened my window and leaned out. False alarm, I yelled down. Nobody here. It must have been a bird. He looked up at me.
A bird?
I think it was an owl, a real big owl. Sorry you got called out. He waved, got back into the car, and drove off. I closed and locked the window, but it was an empty gesture, since a lot of the glass was missing. I ran into the kitchen and ate the chocolate junior. I was half asleep, contemplating the nutritional value of a cream-filled cupcake for breakfast, when there was a knock at my door. It was Tank, Ranger's right-hand man.
Your car turned up at a chop shop, he said.
He handed my bag over to me.
This was on the floor in the back.
And my car?
In your parking lot.
He gave me my keys.
The car's fine, except for a chain attached to the tow. We don't know what the chain was all about.
I closed and locked the door after Tank, stumbled into the kitchen, and ate the package of cupcakes. I told myself it was okay to eat the cupcakes, because it was a celebration. I had my car back. Calories don't count if they're connected to a celebration. Everyone knows this. Coffee would taste good, but it seemed like a lot of work this morning. I had to change the filter, add the coffee and water, and push the button. Not to mention, if I had coffee, I might wake up, and I didn't think I was ready to face the day. Better to go back to bed. I just crawled into bed when the doorbell rang again. I put the pillow over my head and closed my eyes. The doorbell kept ringing. Go away, I yelled. Nobody's home.
Now there was knocking and more ringing. I threw the pillow off and heaved myself out of bed. I stomped to the door, wrenched it open, and glared out.
What?
It was Clown.
It's Saturday, he said. I brought donuts. I always have donuts on Saturday morning.
He looked more closely.
Did I wake you up? Boy, you don't look all that good when you wake up, do you? No wonder you're not married. Do you always sleep in sweats? How'd you get your hair to stick out like that?
How'd you like to have your nose broken a second time? I asked. Clown pushed past me into my apartment.
I saw the car in the parking lot. Did the police find it? Do you have my handcuffs?
I don't have your handcuffs, and get out of my apartment. Go away.
You just need some coffee, Clown said. Where do you keep the filters? I'm always a cranky pants in the morning, too. And then I have my coffee, and I'm a new person.
Why me? I thought. Clown got the coffee out of the refrigerator and started the machine.
I didn't know if bounty hunters worked on Saturday, he said, but I thought, better safe than sorry, so here I am.
I was speechless. The front door was still open, and there was a rap on the door jamb behind me. It was Morelli.
Am I interrupting something?
He asked.
It's not what it looks like, Clown said. I just brought jelly donuts.
Morelli gave me the once-over.
Frightening,
he said. I narrowed my eyes at him. I had a bad night.
That's what they tell me. I understand you were visited by a large bird, an owl.
So?
The owl do any damage?
Nothing worth mentioning.
I'm seeing more of you now than I did when we were living together,
Morelli said.
You aren't doing all this stuff just to have me stop around, are you?
Chapter 6.
Oh, geez, I didn't know you two used to live together, Clown said. Hey, I'm not trying to cut in on anything. We just work together, right?
Right, I said.
So, is this the guy you're engaged to?
Clown asked. A smile twitched at the corner of Morelli's mouth.
You're engaged?
Sort of, I said. I don't want to talk about it. Morelli reached into the bag and selected a donut.
I don't see a ring on your finger.
I don't want to talk about it. Clown's voice was apologetic.
She hasn't had any coffee yet.
Morelli took a bite of donut.
You think coffee will help?
They both looked at me. I pointed stiff-armed to the door.
Out!
I slammed the door after them and slid the security bolt. I leaned against the door and closed my eyes. Morelli had looked great. T-shirt and jeans and a red flannel shirt worn open like a jacket. And he'd smelled good, too. The scent still lingered in my foyer, mingling with jelly donuts. I took a deep breath and had a lust attack. The lust attack was followed by a mental head slap. I sent him away. What was I thinking? Oh, yeah. Now I remember. I was thinking he just said I was frightening. Frightening? I'm having a hot flash over a guy who thinks I'm frightening. On the other hand, he did stop by to see if I was okay. I was running this through while I walked to the bathroom. I was up and awake now. Might as well get on with the day. I switched the light on and caught a glimpse of myself in the mirror.
Eek!
Frightening. I thought Saturday would be a good day to follow Dottie around. I had no real reason to think she was helping Evelyn, only instinct. But sometimes instinct is all you need. There's something special about childhood friendships. They might be set aside for reasons of convenience, but they're seldom forgotten. Mary Lou Malner has been my best friend for as long as I can remember. Truth is, we haven't got a whole lot in common anymore. She's Mary Lou Stankovic now. She's married and has a couple kids, and I'm living with a hamster. Still, if I had to tell someone a secret, it would be Mary Lou. And if I was Evelyn, I'd turn to Dottie Pulaski. It was close to 10 by the time I reached South River. I cruised past Dottie's house and parked a short distance down the street. Dottie's car was in the driveway. A red Jeep was parked curbside. Not Evelyn's car. Evelyn drove a 9-year-old gray Sentra. I pushed my seat back and stretched my legs. If I was a man lurking in front of a house, I'd be suspect. Fortunately, no one paid much attention to a woman. Dottie's front door opened, and a man stepped out. Dottie's two kids jumped out after him and ran around him in circles. He took them by the hand, and they all walked to the Jeep and got in. The ex-husband on visitation day. The Jeep pulled away, and 5 minutes later, Dottie locked the house up and got into her Honda. I followed her easily, out of the neighborhood, onto the highway. She wasn't looking for a tail. Never picked me up in her rearview mirror. We went straight to one of the strip malls on Route 18 and parked in front of a chain bookstore. I watched Dottie get out of her car and cross the lot to the store. She was bare-legged, wearing a sundress with a sweater. I would have been cold in the outfit. The sun was shining, but the air was cool. I guess Dottie had run out of patience for warm weather. She pushed through the doors and went straight for the coffee bar. I could see her through the plate glass window. She ordered a coffee and took it to a table. She sat with her back to the window and looked around. She checked her watch and sipped her coffee. She was waiting for someone. Please let it be Evelyn. It would make everything so easy. I left my car and walked the short distance to the store. I browsed the section to the rear of the coffee bar, staying hidden behind racks of books. I didn't know Dottie personally, but I worried that she might recognize me all the same. I scanned the store for Evelyn and Annie. I didn't want them to see me either. Dottie looked up from her coffee and focused. I followed her line of sight, but I didn't see Annie or Evelyn. I was looking so intently for Annie and Evelyn that I almost missed the red-haired guy making his way toward Dottie. It was Steven Soder. My first reaction was to intercept him. I didn't know what he was doing here, but he was going to ruin everything. Evelyn would run when she saw him. And then it hit me, brain surgeon that I am. Dottie was waiting for Soder. Soder got a coffee and took it to Dottie's table. He sat across from her and slouched in his chair, an arrogant posture. I could see his face, and he didn't look friendly. Dottie leaned forward and said something to Soder. He made a crooked smile that was close to a snarl and nodded his head. They had a brief conversation. Soder stuck his finger in Dottie's face and said something that turned Dottie white. He stood, made one last parting remark, and left. His coffee remained untouched on the table. Dottie collected herself, made certain Soder was out of sight, and then she left too. I followed Dottie to the parking lot. She got into her car, and I ran for mine. Hold the phone. No car. Okay. I know I'm a little dingy sometimes, but I usually remember where I parked the car. I trotted up and down the aisle. I tried one aisle over. No car. Dottie pulled out of her space and headed for the exit. A sleek black car followed a short distance behind Dottie. Jean Ellen. Damn! I rammed my hand into my bag, found my cell phone, and pounded out Ranger's number. Call Jean Ellen and find out what she did with my car, I said to Ranger. Now! A minute later, Jean Ellen called me. I might have seen a black CRV in front of the deli, she said. I punched the end button so hard I broke a nail. I dropped the phone back into my bag and stomped off down the strip mall to the deli. I found my car and checked it over. There were no scratch marks from where Jean Ellen had popped the lock, no loose wires from hot wiring.
Somehow she'd gotten into the car and moved it without leaving a trace of herself. This was a trick Ranger could easily accomplish, and I couldn't hope to pull off. The fact that Jean Ellen could do it really grated on me. I left the strip mall and returned to Dottie's house. No one was home. No car in the driveway. Probably Dottie had taken Jean Ellen straight to Evelyn. Fine. Who cares? I'm not even making any money on this. I did an eye roll. It wasn't fine. If I go back to Mabel with nothing, she'll start bawling again. I'd walk on molten lava and shards of glass before I'd face more of Mabel crying. I hung around until early afternoon. I read the paper, filed my nails, organized my shoulder bag, and talked on my cell phone with Mary Lou Stankovic for half an hour. My legs were twitchy from the confinement, and my butt was asleep. I'd had a lot of time to think about Jean Ellen Burroughs, and none of the thoughts were friendly. In fact, after about an hour of Jean Ellen Burroughs thinking, I was darn cranky, and I'm not sure, but I think steam might have started escaping from the top of my head. Jean Ellen had bigger boobs and a smaller ass than me. She was a better bounty hunter. She had a nicer car. And she had leather pants. I could deal with this. What I couldn't deal with was her involvement with Ranger. I'd thought their relationship had ended, but clearly I was wrong. He knew where she was every minute of the day. While she had a relationship, I had the threat of a single night of guerrilla sex hanging over my head. Okay, so I'd made the deal during a moment of professional desperation. His aid in exchange for my body. And yes, maybe it had been flirty and fun in a scary sort of way. And true, I'm attracted to him. I mean, I'm only human for crying out loud. A woman would have to be dead not to be attracted to Ranger. And it's not like I'm having any luck getting Morelli into my bed these days. So here I am, with my one night. And there's Jean Ellen with some sort of relationship. Well, forget it. I'm not fooling around with a man who's possibly in a relationship. I dialed Ranger and drummed my fingers on the steering wheel while I waited for the connection.
Yo,
Ranger said. I owe you nothing, I said. The deal is off. Ranger was silent for a couple beats, probably wondering why he had ever made the deal in the first place.
Having a bad day?
He finally asked. My bad day has nothing to do with this, I said, and I hung up. My cell phone chirped, and I debated answering. Curiosity ultimately won out over cowardice. Pretty much the story of my life. I've been under a lot of stress, I said. I might even be sick with a fever.
And?
And what?
I thought you might want to retract the part where you tell me the deal is off,
Ranger said. There was a long silence on the phone.
Well?
Ranger asked. I'm thinking.
That's always dangerous,
Ranger said.
And?
He hung up. I was still contemplating the retraction when Dottie rolled in. She parked in her driveway, took two grocery bags from the back seat, and let herself into the house. My phone rang again. I did an eye roll and snapped my phone open. Yes?
Have you been waiting long?
It was Jean Ellen. I whipped my head around, looking up and down the street.
Where are you? Behind the blue van. You'll be happy to know you didn't miss anything this afternoon. Dottie had a full day of housewifey things to do.
Did she know you were following her? There was a pause where I assumed Jean Ellen was stunned that I might think she'd ever get made.
Of course not, Jean Ellen said. She didn't have Evelyn in her day planner today.
Well, cheer up, I said. The day's not over.
True. I thought I'd stay here a bit longer, but the street feels crowded with both of us sitting here.
And
I thought it would be a good idea for you to leave.
No way! You should leave.
If anything happens, I'll call you, Jean Ellen said.
That's a big fib.
True again. Let me tell you something that isn't a fib. If you don't leave, I'll put a bullet hole in your car. I knew from past experience that bullet holes were very bad for resale. I disconnected, put the car in gear, and drove away. I drove exactly 2 blocks and parked in front of a small white ranch. I locked up and walked around the block until I was directly behind Dottie's house, 1 street over. There was no activity on the street. Not a lot of life visible from Dottie's neighbors. Everyone was still at the mall, the soccer game, the Little League game, the car wash. I cut between 2 houses and straddled the white picket fence that enclosed Dottie's backyard. I crossed the small yard and knocked on Dottie's back door. Dottie opened the door and stared out at me, surprised to find a strange woman on her property. "I'm Stephanie Plum," I said. "I hope I didn't startle you by showing up at your back door like this." Relief replaced surprise.
"Of course. Your parents live next to Mabel Markowitz. I went to school with your sister."
"I'd like to talk to you about Evelyn. Mabel is worried about her, and I said I'd do some inquiring around. I came to the back door because the front of your house is under surveillance." Dottie's mouth dropped, and her eyes widened.
"Someone's watching me?"
"Steven Soder has hired a private detective to find Annie. The detective's name is Jean Ellen Burroughs, and she's in a black Jaguar behind the blue van. I spotted her when I drove up, and I didn't want her to see me, so I came through the back." "Take that, Jean Ellen Burroughs. Direct hit. Kapow."
"Oh, my God,"
Dottie said.
"What should I do?"
"Do you know where Evelyn is?"
"No, sorry. Evelyn and I sort of lost touch."
She was lying. She'd waited too long to say no. And now spots of color were blooming on her cheeks. She was possibly the worst liar I'd ever seen. She was a disgrace to Berg women. Berg women were great liars. No wonder Dottie had to move to South River. I let myself into her kitchen and closed the door. "Listen," I said. "Don't worry about Jean Ellen. She's not dangerous. You just don't want to lead her to Evelyn."
"You mean, if I knew where Evelyn was, then I should be careful about going there?"
"Careful isn't good enough. Jean Ellen will follow you and you'll never see her. Don't go anywhere near Evelyn. Stay away from her." Dottie wasn't liking this advice. She said. "Maybe we should talk about Evelyn." She shook her head.
"I can't talk about Evelyn."
I gave her my card. "Call me if you change your mind. If Evelyn gets in touch with you and you need to go see her, please consider letting me help you. You can call Mabel and check me out." Dottie looked at the card and nodded.
"Okay."
I let myself out the back door and slipped through the yards to the street. I walked the half block back to my car and took off for home. I stepped out of the elevator and felt my heart sink at the sight of Clown camping in my hall. He was sitting with his back to the wall, legs outstretched, arms crossed over his chest. His face brightened when he saw me, and he scrambled to his feet.
"Boy," he said, "you've been gone all afternoon. Where were you? You didn't catch Bender, did you? You wouldn't catch him without me, would you? I mean, we're a team, right?"
"Right," I said. "We're a team. A team without handcuffs." I led us into my apartment, and we both migrated to the kitchen. I slid a look at the answering machine. Nothing was blinking. No message from Morelli pleading for a date. Not that Morelli ever pleaded for anything. Still, a girl could hope. Large mental sigh. I was going to spend Saturday night with Albert Clown. It felt like doomsday. Clown was looking at me expectantly. He was like a puppy, eyes bright, tail wagging, waiting to be taken for a walk. Endearing, in an incredibly annoying sort of way.
"Now what?" he asked. "What do we do now?"
I needed to think about this. Usually the problem is finding the FTA. I never had a problem finding Bender. I had a problem hanging on to him. I opened the refrigerator and stared inside.
My motto has always been, when all else fails, eat something. Let's make dinner, I said.
Oh, boy, a home-cooked meal. That would really hit the spot. I haven't eaten in hours.
Okay, I had a candy bar just before you got here, but that doesn't count, does it? I mean, it's not like real food. And I'm still hungry. It's not like it's a meal, right?
Right.
What should we cook? Pasta? You got some fish? We could have fish. Or a nice steak. I still eat meat. Lots of people don't eat meat anymore, but I still eat it. I eat everything.
Do you eat peanut butter?
Sure. I love peanut butter. Peanut butter is a staple, right?
Right. I ate a lot of peanut butter. You don't have to cook it. You only dirty one knife in the preparation. And you can count on it. It's always the same, as opposed to picking out a piece of fish, which in my experience is risky. I made us peanut butter and bread and butter pickle sandwiches, and because I had company, I added a layer of potato chips.
This is very creative, Clown said. You get a lot of textures this way, and you don't get your fingers greasy by eating the potato chips separately. I'll have to remember this. I'm always looking for new recipes.
All right. I was going to take another shot at capturing Bender. I was going to break into his house one more time, as soon as I located a pair of handcuffs. I dialed Lula's number. So, I said to Lula, what's going on tonight?
I'm just trying to figure out what to wear on account of it's Saturday, and it's not like I'm some loser who can't get a date. I'd be out of the house by now, but I can't make up my mind between two dresses.
Do you have handcuffs?
Sure. I got handcuffs. You never know when you need handcuffs.
Maybe I could borrow them, just for a couple hours. I need to bring Bender in.
You're going to go get Bender tonight?
You need help?
I could cancel my date. Then I wouldn't have to decide on a dress. You have to come over here to get the cuffs anyway. You might as well take me with.
You don't actually have a date, do you?
I could if I wanted.
I'll pick you up in a half hour. Lula was in the front seat, and Clown was in the back seat. We were parked in front of Bender's apartment, trying to decide on the best approach.
You watch the back door, I said to Lula, and Albert and I will go in the front door.
I don't like that plan, Lula said. I want to go in the front door, and I want to be the one holding the cuffs.
I think Stephanie should hold the cuffs, Clown said. She's the bounty hunter.
Huh, Lula said. What am I, chopped liver? And besides, they're my cuffs. I should get to hold them. Either I hold them, or you haven't got no cuffs.
Fine, I said to Lula. You go in the front door, and you hold the cuffs. Just make sure you get them on Bender.
Well, what about me?
Clown wanted to know.
Where do I go? Do I take the back door? What do I do back there? Do I bust in the door?
No. No door busting. You stand there and wait. Your job is to make sure Bender doesn't escape from the back door. So if the back door opens and Bender runs out, you have to stop him.
You can count on me. He won't get past me. I know I look pretty tough, but I'm even tougher than that. I'm real tough.